up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit MassBreds.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I thought I saw a girl brought to life. She was warm, she came around, and she was dignified. She showed me what it was to cry. Well, you couldn't be that girl I adored. Don't seem to know, seem to care what your heart is for. But I don't know her anymore. There's nothing where she used to lie. The conversation has run dry. That's what's going on. Nothing's fine, I'm torn. I'm all out of
faith. We're back at the races.
This is how I feel.
Hour three on this Monday that's been dedicated to Howie Tesher, and we're figuring in some of the weekend news and things from around the game, and perfect timing actually to some degree because Steve Haskin joining us, and I wanted to get Steve in because he certainly had a chance to walk the shed row with Howie and any number of different times over the years. And Steve is launching the Derby Doings as well this week. Steve.
Today.
Today, not even this week.
It's up already.
Outstanding.
All 5,000 plus words of it.
Well, wait. Why? You have to leave some horses off and weave them in as the winter comes.
I did, but I wrote like essays on each one because I try to get as much info. I always do this every year. I write so much about each horse, and then next week I have nothing to write. week after week, I'm saying I hope somebody new comes along. By the way, because like you have the same horses, and then you find out like in the first start's going to be in like the Rebel. I said, what am I going to write about between now and the Rebel? It's just so much time. I said, I try to leave off pedigree this time, but come the third or fourth week, I said, I've got nothing left to say about these horses. I mean, I've said it all. But I try to get as much in, and I went over all of their races. I watched, I don't know how many hundreds of races and taking notes and it just went on and on. I just wrote all week, and next thing you know, I'm looking at the bottom, and it says like 5,278 horses. I remember when I did it when I did the Derby Dozen for the Blood Horse. They had called me towards the end there, and they said, listen, could you keep it down? Keep it like around 2,500. So I had to like really make everything concise, even because I have that knocking on the door segment where all the horses that are not ranked, I try to tell stories about them and talk about where they're going and what they've done and little behind the scenes stuff. Next thing I know, I look up and I said, "Oh my God, I've written like way, way too much here."
Well, there a lot of weeks. The up and coming is longer than the top 12.
Oh, it is. People always tell me, I like knocking on the door the best because I get more into it. The only problem is this year, by the way, is that other than, Forte, I don't like anybody. I mean, there's nobody that really knocked my socks off. I'm just looking, there's some really nice maiden winners, but there always are. And then it's a big, big difference when a lot of them face winners. But I'm looking at these horses, and I said, forget about sorting through these horses. I couldn't even sort through the Brad Cox horses.
Yeah.
I don't know how many I've got listed on there. Every time I look up, I said, Brad Cox. I've never seen anybody. I know Pletch has always had some, but a lot of them were maiden winners and things, and Baffert would have exciting maiden winners. Brad Cox has got like 11 horses in the future wager, and all of them are good horses that could go in the rankings. I'm saying I don't know how you separate these horses. It's I don't know how he's going to separate them, but I got to sort through all these horses. I can't even separate them. Never mind the Derby doings or dozen. It's supposed to be dozen, but that's one good thing is that this week I started off with 15, Sometimes I have 13. I call it the baker's dozen. One thing about secretary.com, I do whatever I want. I could rank the top 18 if I want. I could always make up some name for it.
Well, and I'm just looking, you know, with the Baffert horses not eligible for the Derby future wager, the Cox contingent just absolutely, you know, dotted the entire lineup, and of the top, I mean, individual entries past the 2-1 on the all others. Instant Coffee, the winner on Saturday, the Le Comp for Al Gold, 15-1. Loggins, 16-1 was.
Loggins is gone, by the way. Everybody's betting him. He's the second favorite in the future wager. And I spoke to Brad Cox. He says he's had a whole bunch of different ailments, and he's not even close to being in training. But Churchill Downs keeps putting him on there, and people keep betting him. I think it was like second choice in the future wager. He's not even going to be in training, and they're not even thinking Derby with him.
Well, there's also beyond that, you've got that Corona Bolt that won the Sugar Bowl. You got Giant
That's
Mischief.
That's a good horse.
It is a good horse.
I got him ranked. I think once he stretches out, he's got the pedigree, and I like everything about that. I love the horse's mechanics. I love the way he runs, and he could be a very interesting horse. But yeah, you know, I mean, some of these horses, they all look alike. You know, Victory Formation and Instant Coffee. I mean, you know, their numbers are not that good. You know, there's nobody really fast.
No. Well, but there regularly isn't anybody fast. And I know that you probably looked at the Thoroughgraph numbers for the group, the 40, you know, for the 39 individual entrants. But it's this time of year. They will not get fast until March. And then all of a sudden, the numbers jump forward. No, exactly. Exactly.
The thing is, like Arabian Night, you know, Baffert's his live horse is going in the Southwest Stakes. I mean, he got like a 2.25 in his first start. And that's, and where does he go from there? I mean, where does he start running his negative numbers? I mean, you don't want that now.
No.
You know, you just want a steady. You want a steady progression. You wanted them to start getting fast, like you said, in March. Not now. Not in their first start. And that happens a lot with Baffert horses. You know, he gets them so sharp and so fit so quickly that, you know, it looks like everyone's going to be like a Justify, who you never heard of until he breaks his maiden in February. He makes his debut, I should say. So you just don't know. But, I mean, all these other horses, you know, you start looking at the speed ratings in the 70s and 80s. I don't like to go too much with that. I try to go more visual. And I start looking at horses that have, you know, really impressed me visually. To me, one of the best stories of horses which I have ranked number 3 that people don't even talk about is Practical Move, the horse that won the Los Al Futurity. I mean, here's a horse who's trained by Tim Yakteen.
Yep.
Who... He runs into the Los Al Futurity in a 5-horse field, and three of them are Baffert horses. And in that horse's first 4 starts, he finished behind 4 different Baffert horses. So now he finally gets the better of them in the Los Al Futurity. And let's say Timmy Yakteen, as people would predict, is going to get horses like Cave Rock and maybe Arabian Night if they make it to the Derby. But he's got his own there now.
Yep.
You know, he's got his own horse. I find it a very interesting situation. He's a nice horse. I watched all of his races, and I like that horse. I don't love anybody. I mean, Forte to me, you know, is a standout on form. But I mean, you look at the Kentucky Jockey Club with Instant Coffee. You watch that race. You got 8 horses coming to the wire across the track.
Yep.
You know, normally you don't like to see that, but horses have come out of that race and run well. One horse, which I really like, is a horse that won an allowance race recently named Cyclone Mischief, who I thought looked...
We talked to Dale last week.
Yeah, did you? Okay. I thought he looked really good. He's going to be a nice horse. And
well, Steve, you know, you can start listening again because I won't be making fun of the Cowboys from this point forward. There's no need.
Hey, listen, I don't root for the Cowboys. I've never rooted for them. I just keep picking them every year because I'm convinced that they're going to win the Super Bowl. And they do the same thing every year. And it's like, you know the thing about What is insanity? Keep doing the same thing over and over again and hope for a different result. Well, I keep picking him every year. But the thing is, I've been a long time Cowboy hater. I hated him, when they were playing against the Giants, because I was a Giant fan since 1958. And then I hated him when I was rooting for a while for the Eagles when we lived in Jersey, and I was going to Eagles games with Dan Barslow. We went to a whole bunch of Eagle games and sat in his suite. So I started liking the Eagles, and everybody thinks I root for them. I don't root for them, but I'm not. Let me go on record right now. I ain't picking him again.
It's over. You're getting a divorce.
I thought this was the year. Well, I think congratulations on your Eagles.
Thank you.
I never really was a believer this year that they were as good as they looked, but boy, they looked awfully good this weekend. I mean, you looked terrific.
Should have two outstanding champions. Whatever matchup you end up with of these four teams, it's going to be.
Oh my planet! God, what
fun.
He did in that snowstorm.
He's fun.
Just picking him apart. Oh my goodness.
He is fun. There's no doubt. And frankly. I mean, I like Buffalo as a community. I'm a Sabre fan, but there's a lot more horse people that are Bengal fans than Bills fans. So for Kentuckians and people in the tri-state area, having the Bengals back in a championship game is cool.
Well, there are a lot of Bengals fans in Buffalo.
Sure,
their fans travel well, but. Boy, you look at some of these teams that have been totally turned around by the quarterbacks. I mean, Bengals were a laughing stock. Joe Burrow now makes them a powerhouse. Look at the Jaguars. We're in the dumps.
Yep.
Look what Trevor Lawrence has done for that team.
That's true.
I mean, these quarterbacks have come along and just turned these bad teams around. Look at the Lions getting turned around.
That's true.
Jared Goff, everybody's making fun of him, and he had a tremendous year, and they got that crazy coach. I love him.
Steve, let me get this in, because I still got a few. I want to make sure everybody's aware. Secretariat.com for the Derby doings each week,
yes.
Derby rankings, and you
allow
do
about a half hour to read it.
Well, I just went up and down, and you do have a horse that I'm kind of aware of because of ownership, and that's that Recruiter, who was the second longest price. Coming out of the weekend last night in pool three, 145-1, Cal Lynch.
Ooh.
And this is an Army Mule colt out of a Medaglia d'Oro mare, and I've been getting fed plenty of info on Recruiter. He's okay.
His numbers are good.
He's okay.
His numbers are really good.
Nice horse.
All of his Bristnet numbers are good. It's just a question of what he does when he runs against better horses, and comes out of Maryland or Parks, but I like the fact he's training at Fair Hill right now, and he looks like a really nice horse. So
yep.
That's the kind of story we need in a year like this when you have a dozen Brad Cox horses and Pletcher and Baffert and Asmussen. I mean, basically it's like three quarters of your future wager. So if you're looking for a nice Cinderella story, I don't know if we can go back to back after last year. But if you're looking for one, I mean, he looks like an interesting horse. I was tempted to put him in there, but, I just couldn't because he just hasn't faced anybody yet, and there were just so many horses to choose
keep
from.
Keep an eye on him. Recruiter. Let me, Steve, let me turn our attention to the topic of the morning and the tributes we've been doing to Howie Tesher. And, you love an outgoing horseman for copy, and how much fun was it? How much fun was it to go to Howie?
Oh, God. The thing is, I can't even picture Howie at 87. When I think of Howie, I still think of Howie, from the 90s, the early 90s. I keep picturing him. I don't picture an 87-year-old man. Howie was just, he was just so much fun. And he, when he had a thought in his head, he would just go on and on about it, and he was not your typical trainer by any means. He was not like a horseman's horseman. I don't know if Howie ever was on the back of a horse or not, But I mean, he's the only trainer I know that would commute from Manhattan to come to the racetrack. And you know, he didn't dress. He didn't talk like a horseman. You know, like a trainer. He didn't dress like a trainer. He just was so totally different. And he just always told it like it is. And the funny thing is that when he talked about when he would talk about the racetrack and about trainers and working on the racetrack, he had this obsession with horse manure. I don't know if anybody told you about that, but he always felt that horse manure was like the lure of the racetrack, and that it would get into people's brains, and they would come, and he thought that there was something in horse manure that makes people get involved in horse racing that affected the brain. Because, you know, he'd always say, you know, have you ever seen anybody on the backstretch who was normal? You know, he's, you know, it's that smell of the horse manure that gets inside their brain. And the funny thing is, I remember when I first started going to the racetrack, you know, when I first got interested in horse racing, we're going back into the late 60s, early 70s, and I used to go to the backstretch. I would go with my father or with a friend, and the smell of horse manure would like linger through the rest of the day, and it was intoxicating.
Yep.
I don't want to sound like George Costanza here. We're talking about, you know, manure, but there was something intoxicating about it. And how he really nailed it. I mean, I can understand what he was talking about, but he would always talk about, he was trying to figure out what was the lore of the racetrack. He just felt that there was a horse manure that would get in people's brains, you know, but he just was like totally different. I mean, you just look at his background, you know, you look at his background. And I mean, when he went to Florida, when he went to college in Florida, I mean, it took him like forever to graduate. And, he majored in journalism. It took him so long. He said, he always said it took him so long to graduate because he couldn't spell. he took journalism, but he never could spell. He was just such a fun guy. The funny thing is, the first time I covered him in the Triple Crown was with Bull and the Heather.
Sure.
And you know, he comes in there. You know, he's a big horse with the Florida Derby, and everybody was waiting for him to show up at the trainer's dinner. And they said, well, you got to hear Howie Tesher's going to be full of jokes. Or Howie Tesher's going to be just so funny, and everybody's looking forward to it. Howie Tesher does not show up, and nobody has a clue why he didn't show up. And he would say that he had just some things to do. He couldn't show up. I don't know if I should mention her name, but he was out on a date. He went out to dinner with a famous female sports person, TV personality that would do color on horse racing. You probably know who I mean. I don't know if I should mention her name, but she was very famous in all sports. But anyway, he decided to just go out on a date with her. everybody was waiting for him, and he was going to be the star of the show. And I saw him the next morning, and he said, which of the two would you do? You know, this was a very good-looking woman, let's put it that way. You know, and, you know, she was on football and did horse racing, and she was a sort of an institution back then. But I don't know how he had something going on there with her. I don't know. I mean, you're talking about a guy, by the way, whose father was a bookie.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's, you know, and he almost had like a bookie mentality, you know, because he was, you know, he loved to gamble, you know, he loved to bet. And I'll tell you one story, by the way, which I saw the other side of Howie. I happened to be with him at the Preakness. We were standing at the rail when he had champagne for Ashley, who really looked good for the Preakness. Yeah, he ran pretty good in the Derby, and he was training beautifully, beautiful horse. And we were standing at the rail, and we just went out for a gallop. And he comes back right in front of us, and Howie looks at him, and the horse is dead lame. And, and the one thing about Howie, he never got really demonstrative or anything, but you could just see, like, he was, like, crushed, and they went back, and it turned out the horse had a fracture. And that was it. That was it. But, I mean, I was with him that day when we saw the horse come back dead lame. We're standing by the rail. And he was, like, joking around, having fun. The horse was just out for a little gallop. It's not like a workout or, you know, a strenuous workout. Just a gallop. And he comes back, and he's dead lame. And I think Howie had a really good chance to win a classic with him. He was, you know, he was a very good horse. The only thing is, Howie absolutely hated his name. Absolutely detested the name Champagne for Ashley. And then I remember after the horse started winning, you remember he was winning these races early in his career by like 10 lengths and 12 lengths. And then he gets him to the Derby, and Howie was saying, yeah, I'm really starting to like that name a lot now. He completely changed. He went from hating the horse's name to loving the horse's name when he got good.
There was a horse, Steve, and it predates, it goes back to, you know, his first, you know, really prominent early good horses, that when digging through, you know, some of the ones that were less familiar, because I, you know, didn't really start paying attention until the 80s, and coming across Tap Shoes.
Tap Shoes, you said?
Yeah, Tap Shoes.
I remember that horse very well.
A nice horse that was. And the fact that he did not win two-year-old champion, it went to Roving Boy for Joe Manzi. And I mean, it seemed like he was poised. I guess, didn't run well in the Champagne, and that soured the voters, I guess. But he had won the Futurity and the Hopeful and the Sanford.
No, he was a very good horse. Very good horse. You remember who he was by the way?
No.
I think it was this stallion's like really first good horse that you really ever heard of. It was his first really good horse. Very interesting stallion. Any idea?
No.
Reaver Ridge.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I did see that he was by Reaver Ridge.
Yeah, it was a beautiful horse, beautiful chestnut. It was a really, really nice horse. But it was the first. He was the first Reaver Ridge that, you know, turned out that was a good horse. And Reaver Ridge didn't have a lot of really good horses. He had some good ones, obviously, but Tap Shoes was the first one.
You know what's strange? For a multiple Grade One winner, because the Hopeful was a Grade One and the Futurity at the time. The name has been reused.
It's used this year. There's a horse called Tappet Shoes this year, a three-year-old on the Derby Trail. It just ran Saturday.
Well, that's okay. I don't mind that. But there was an actual mare by Tappet for the Firestones named Tap Shoes. How does a multiple Grade One winner, how does the name get used again?
Yeah, you would think that would be protected.
That's what I usually. That's got a P next to it, a permanent, you know, permanently retired name. But there was another one. I went to go look up Tap Shoes. I came across this one time that she ran once. She was a Tappet out of Rum Charger, who was a nice horse in her own right, I think, if I'm not mistaken, and Firestone family and. Yeah, they let them use that name again.
Wow. Well, the thing is, you know, leading up to their Champagne, he had won like everything. I mean, besides the Victorian Hopeful, he won all the stakes at Saratoga. I believe he won the Sanford and the Saratoga Special also.
So he swept the series.
He swept everything, by the way. And the thing I remember is that, you know, following him on the Derby Trail, that was a big year for me because, you know, I was big Pleasant Colony fan in 81, but early in the year, people forget he won the Flamingo, and the Flamingo was a Grade One.
Huh. Well, and I'm just counter the, I guess, the counterbalance, and I should have been, I guess, Roving Boy actually absolutely did earn it, because
he was a good horse.
He's a good horse
too, because, you know, he's known, you know, he broke down and had to be euthanized, but hey, Roving Boy was a very good horse. He won everything out there. You know, he won all the big races, and he won the Norfolk and
Del Marfi Turning.
Back then,
No, they did. It was the Norfolk. It actually was the Norfolk then. And he also won. He won the Hollywood Futurity, the Norfolk, the Del Mar Futurity. He swept all three.
Yeah.
And the Balboa. Yeah,
very talented horse.
He broke. What, he broke down in the Alibi. In the Alibi Handicap.
Yeah, I can't remember which race he broke down in, but I remember when he does. It was just crushing, because, you know, he was on his way to stardom.
Well, the other horse I got to bring up, even though it wasn't a Triple Crown trail type, I came across Influence. What a nice horse this was, and you never hear his name mentioned.
No, I mean, listen, first of all, people forget that Howie trained a lot of good horses. He's won a lot of big races. But Influent was a really nice horse. You know, and the thing is, he really didn't get good, if I remember correctly. You know, it's just, I don't remember a lot. But if I remember correctly, he didn't get good until it was, like, really, really old, and they put him on the grass. And
he
won, like, a Man of War. And yep. I forgot which races, but he won, like, a ton of races. But I think his first big win, when he put him on the grass and he won all these grade ones, I think he was like 5 or 6 years old.
That would, let's see, because he was foaled in 91 and started winning in 97. Yep.
6 years old.
Yep.
Can you believe that? He did nothing until he was six.
Well,
when the Man of War and, you know, a whole bunch of other good races in New York.
Well, and the thing that's interesting is that, you know, that Howie had him the whole time. And Aaron Yagoda gave us the explanation that this was a horse that he had bought for somebody that was a hot walker that had gotten an injury settlement. And then over the course of four seasons, the horse makes $950,000 and becomes a multiple grade one winner, the Man of War and the Caesars International.
If people don't remember the Caesars International, that's the UN, which was like the biggest.
Yeah.
For a while, you know, the Man of War was relatively new race. You know, when you look, I think it started like in the 60s or so. It was a new race. The big race in the East was United Nations Handicap,
sure,
which became the Caesars International. But, I mean, this horse, I mean, it took him long enough to realize. I mean, the horse did nothing. I don't even know if he ever won a stake race.
He won the Maker's Mark was his. He had won.
No, I'm talking about before they put him on the grass.
Oh no, he had won some allowance. He was an allowance horse.
Yeah, I mean, he did nothing at three and four, you know, and I don't think he did anything at five. And as a 6 year old,
crazy.
Really, when was the last time you ever saw that? The horse went from being nothing to a multiple grade one winner. And I remember that I think he broke some course records along the way, and he was
crazy.
It was just incredible, incredible story with that horse.
Well, he had won one stake. He had won the Bunty Lawless up at Woodbine because he was an Ontario bred. I love that. And that on the turf, that was the first indication that he was, there was something there to work with. Unbelievable. Well, Steve, I wanted to get you in on this, and it ended up being a perfect timing kind of a conversation. I've been meaning to call you for a couple of weeks, to get the year started, and also, any eclipse type, conversation. And, are you retaining your voting, status?
I haven't voted in 12 years.
All right. I wasn't sure.
What happened is that I just stopped voting, and they just took it away from me.
Yeah, I remember. You know what? Now that you say that, I remember you said you stopped sending in the ballot, and then a couple of years later,
I'm
they
not
finally.
Big on that.
That's
you
right.
Know,
that's right.
Awards don't, You know, it just doesn't. It doesn't faze me. I'm all for it. I just don't. I'm just not comfortable picking who wins this and who wins that.
I
don't want to listen. If you want to pick for, you know, who's the top trainer, I think that really turned me off. Was that people would look at the back of the supplement, the PPs, and they would give you the rankings, the standings, and whoever was on top. The top breeder, it was like, what, I think it was for several years. I forgot who it was. Somebody was like the delete, when he eclipsed the top breeder, like every year because he was on top. Skronik was one that won every year, and it was somebody else before him.
Ramsey's won, I think, right?
It was even before that. I forgot who it was. One of these breeders that it wasn't one of the, you don't even know him now. It was just at the time he was like really hot. He was like, he had like 8,000 horses. I can't remember who it was, but you know, people with that, they just wouldn't putting any effort into it.
Yep. It's frustrating.
Whoever was on top. Before they went, one other thing that I always found very funny about Howie there was one time when it was, and I don't know if it was Champagne for Ashley or somebody like that, but Howard pointed up to a pigeon sitting in the tree, and he's sitting up there, and he's watching the horse. He says he's watching the horse so he's studying to become a trainer. that was one thing about Howie. You know, like I said, he looked down on the sport in a funny way. He looked down on training horses like he was just this crazy profession that he happened to be in. But he always had a way of putting things, but he was a riot. He really was.
I appreciate this, Steve. And secretariat.com, the Derby rankings, and we will check in with you. As the babies are good. I see the babies' pictures are adorable. The new baby's adorable.
Yes, well, listen, you know, you too. You're going through the same thing.
Yeah, we are. They're about the same age too, right, the two babies?
Yeah, the baby's 9 months.
Yeah, same. That's about the same.
And Theo will be five.
Ooh, five is older. The Lennon's going to be three.
Oh, okay.
But not
that's
far.
Not that far.
Not far off. You know, not far off.
You know, just you know, basically going through the same the same great stuff, the same crises type things. But you know, both kids are just adorable. You know, Theo is just so sharp, and Lily is just an angel. I mean, she's just so beautiful and so cute and. It's great. I'm glad we moved to Connecticut.
That's the one thing, Tina. You know, we got 3 hours and 45 minutes to Rochester, or they've got to pile the kids in, but we got a third on the way. Third is coming in May.
Oh, really? Cool. Yeah. Congratulations! Yeah, yeah. My goodness.
And then I think they got to turn the spigot off. I mean, it's enough already.
Well,
cut the cord.
Talk about turning the spigot off. By the way, after two.
Yeah,
West got a vasectomy.
Exactly. Tina's trying to convince her son that's enough.
Not only that, but you know they're close apart. You can have three of them that are it's going to be boom, boom, boom.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So it's going to be everything. They're going to be like 2 years. Each one's going to be 2 years apart.
That's how she wanted it, though. That's how Andrea. That was her choice. She wanted to have the kids be contemporaries. She didn't want to have too big of a gap between ages.
Well, just tell him one thing, Buzz. Tell him if he was living in China now, if he had if he had more than three, he'd be executed.
On that note. Thank you, Steve. Thanks a lot. I'm glad I caught you.
Steve
Askin, everybody. Great to get Steve back on the air. And we're going to find kind of roll around to Steve Shea. And Steve will be new to us, but he really kind of bookends this entire morning just perfectly. The pairing of Aaron Yagoda to start the conversation this morning and Steve Shea to round it out is really perfect. Steve, appreciate you visiting, and we've spent the morning trying to help people appreciate the life of Howie and what he meant, what he meant to the game, and what he meant to everybody that came in contact with him.
Oh yeah, yeah, just so many years. I was thinking back yesterday how many years I've known him, and just the laughs along the trail have just been just too many. Just talking to different friends, you know, in the last couple of days, and it's been, you know, from the gambling adventures to just life in general, and it was just always fun. It just always was fun. You know, that's what you can say about somebody in your reference when you think about them over the years. Just so much fun, so many laughs, you know, just a joy to be around. And as everyone has said, has called your show and has tweeted and texted you, I mean, it's just been fun. Some of the gambling stuff was just outrageous.
Well, you got to tell you got to tell a few stories, because you did some bookmaking and you were you did some betting anyway.
Right. Yeah. Actually, I had some friends that after I ran out of money, I said, "Well, I don't have any cash on me. If you like something, let me know and I'll book you." I mean, that's about the extent of that. But I wasn't successful in that end of it either. But I was in the transportation business, the horse transportation business, when I first met Howard up in Saratoga many years ago. But I guess one of the funniest stories, and it involves a little bit of gambling, but there's so many of them, and I'd take time to set them up. But this one involved a horse, in New York at Belmont, a filly named Made in America. And Howie and I were out on a Friday night after the races having a drink at P.J. Clark's, I believe. Huh. And he said, "What are you doing this weekend?" And I used to go out to the races with him. I said, "Well, this weekend I'm going to go down to the Jersey Shore. My parents had a house down there in Spring Lake." And I said, "I'm just going to go down there for the weekend and probably play some golf. I'll come back the first of the week." He goes, "You're not going." I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "You're not going." I said, "Why?" He goes, "Put your right hand in the air." So we're standing at Clark's, put my right hand in the air. He says, "You swear you're not going to tell anybody?" And I said, "Okay." He says, "I'm running a horse Sunday that I really like, and you're going to stay around and bet." So I said, "Okay." And he said, "But I'm not going to talk to anybody. So Sunday morning, just meet me." And I lived about four blocks away from him at the time when he lived on 58th Street. He said, "Just meet me in the morning, and we'll drive out to the races, but don't call. I'm not going to talk to answer my phone." He said, "I like this horse." He said, "The only thing I'm afraid of is I was afraid to do too much with her because people would notice how well she was training. And that's the only thing I'm afraid of here, but she's going to be 8 or 9 to 1, blah, 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 blah." So I show up at his apartment and the valet brings his car out and comes down. He has a paper bag full of cash and hands it to me. And it was a pretty good amount. So I'm sitting there looking at it, and he goes, "Okay, we're just going into the paddock. We're not going up to the box. We're going to sit there, wait, saddle the horse." So we do this. We're sitting there, and first flash, the horse morning line was 8 to 1. First flash, 5 to 2. He goes, he's almost sick. We're sitting on the bench in the paddock area of the valet. He goes, "We can't bet. I'm not going to bet at 5 to 2. I'm not a sap." And there was a horse, that filly named, I had trained by Angel Pennant Jr., that was also in there, and there was a story on her. So we were thinking about mixing up a couple small exactas, which we did. But, I mean, I had money stuffed in each pocket in my sport coat, in both pants pockets. And he's telling me, "Well, bet it slow." And I said, "I know how to do it. Don't worry about that." So we never bet. We sit there. Made in America wins by the length of the stretch. And the Angels Junior's horse runs second. Exactly paid like $19. But Howie's filly only paid, $7 or $8 or something like that. But it wasn't what the bonanza that he thought we were going to recoup that day. So I said, "You made me stay around for a 5 to 2 shot. I mean, come on."
Did you hold that over his head for years?
No, never. It was just because he was sicker than I was, because I was going to bet a couple $100. I can't tell you how much cash I had on me to bet for him. Because he didn't want to go to the window. He didn't want people to see. He didn't want people telling, you know, "Yeah, I like the horse." There's nothing like telling people you don't like your horse and he wins by 10 or she wins by 10. And but he didn't want to destroy the price, but it was already destroyed. So word was out someplace.
Well, she had actually, and I just looked her up. She was an explodent mare for Joe Allen. Mm-hmm. For Joe Allen.
Yeah, Joe Allen. Yeah, Joe Allen owned her. I think Norm Cassie might have bred her. I think
absolutely her. Did.
Yeah. So it goes back, you know, pretty good ways. You know, he had so many fun horses, you know, Bolshoi Boy, I guess people have mentioned. Johnny
sure.
Greathouse Jr. from Glencrest Farm, and Art Belford owned that. They bought it as a two-year-old in at the Hialeah sale. So Hialeah still had a two-year-old sale down there. And they ran the horse and didn't really ran it for maiden 50. It won over $1 million. Its first race was maiden 50 at Aqueduct. And another gambling coup. They said, well, we're afraid this horse, Foamy Not Scott, was in there, and they claimed him. And, of course, he was up the street and never won. And the Bolshoi Boy wins off. But, I mean, it was just one after another. There was another story about Parmenti up at Saratoga. I don't know how much time you have.
Go ahead.
It takes a little bit more.
Go ahead.
Setting up. It was Harold Snowden, who was the manager for Lou Daugherty's Stallion Station, bought a horse from Greentree, and Jack gave her name. I can't recall the name of the horse. And he bought it for the Stallion Station for Lou. And his girlfriend at the time, Ramona Smith, was training that horse. Her ex-husband, Mickey Garamone, was riding the horse. Okay, so Howie is training a horse that Harold owns and running in Harold's name, called Parmenti. Last race on the grass at Saratoga for maybe $35,000. Angel Cordero is riding Howie's horse. So can I tell you how this is going to come out? And Howie's horse is 12 or 13 to 1. And won on a disqualification at Belmont for about the same price tag a month earlier. So Angel, who misses nothing, goes to Howie. Doesn't Snowden own this horse? What's he doing over there? And so Howie yells to him, hey, Harold, get over here and give your jock instructions. And Harold comes over, running over, and he goes, Angel, it's worth a dime to you if you get there. And Howie, as he legs him up, goes, ride like hell. So, needless to say, Angel wins the race, raises his whip like he won the Kentucky Derby, and we're all in the wind pitcher, laughing our ass off. There's all these guys, Jim Scully, who owns Wajima, I think Merv Marks was in there, Harold, David Greathouse, we're all just standing there. Everyone is laughing as hard as they can. It was a comical picture. And Howie had the track photographer write on the wind picture before he sent it out to everybody, we are family. And so it was another betting coup. Howie's horse paid 30-something bucks, and you can't find the horse that Mickey and the one that Harold bet on. That they bought from Greentree. I mean, this was up the street someplace.
Was this Saratoga? Was it Saratoga?
This at Saratoga, yeah. Last race of the day, one day at Saratoga, yeah.
Here it is, August 15th, 1980, the ninth race.
Okay, yeah. I thought it was the last race of the day for some reason, but yeah. That was funny. And you know, I had all these wind pictures, and I lost that one. I can't find it. So when I go back down to Miami here, it's how he had all these pictures in his niece's garage. And I told her I was going to come down here and go through because that's the one I still want to get because the We Are Family scribbled across the bottom is so funny.
But, well, you could get Adam Colonnais will pull that up for you.
No, he can't. He can't because he only went back a few years. I had my my daughter called him when she was working for Charlie Hayward and asked her that, ask him if she could, you know, get the picture. And they said, we only go back a few years. I know, I tried. I don't know, and moving and stuff, it's one of the ones I lost, and it's one of the ones I wanted to
sure.
Because it was so funny. I mean, everybody, you never saw a picture, just everybody in the wind picture laughing, and no one bet a nick upon a horse that paid 30-something bucks. But we all knew the story, and Harold's holding the horse laughing. Harold bit pretty good on the other horse. So he could always...
That's what makes it fun.
And as I said, just away from the track, we had so many laughs just in life. I mean, it was good. I talked to him a lot when he went into the memory facility down there. He was still pretty good, you know. And I remember a show you did before the Florida Derby one year, and you asked him about Bull and Heather.
Yeah.
And it was going back just before. And you could tell, because I was listening to the show, and you could tell when you talked to him, you know, you knew he couldn't remember 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago, but he was really kind of losing some of the longer term stuff. But I do remember you asking him one question, and I don't know why you even asked him. You said, Howie, well, how old are you now? And he goes, you kidding me? I'm not telling you that. There's women listening.
That's right. I forgot. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. And that was so typical of him. He scratched out his birth date on his driver's license. And he lost one girlfriend one time because she saw his passport. She goes, you're 10 years older than I. You told me you were.
It's so great.
Yeah,
it's so great.
But that was it. And when he was in the home, when he was still able to converse and he was using the phone and he was sitting outside in the sun and he says, oh, this place, it's the best. And I'm sitting around. I said, well, you're sitting out there. Can you see the guard tower from where you're sitting? I said, when the guy turns around, make a dash for the wall and I'll pick you up 2 blocks away. And he just started, and he laughed like he did all the time, but it was always fun.
Wait.
And one other story about PJ Clarkson, I'll let you go. I was a witness to he and aforementioned Harold Snowden sitting there at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And this is when Dan Lavezza still owned the place way back then before he passed away and they sold it. They ate the menu. They ate the entire menu, and it went from 4 o'clock maybe till about 8:30 or 9. And Howie was a prodigious eater and never showed it. I mean, he was athletic and everything. But I mean, he and Harold ate the entire menu from 4, and it was on the board on the wall in the back.
Ooh, right.
If you remember,
sure.
Clark's in
sure.
The old days, yeah. And it was, and now it's a lot bigger menu and stuff, but it was still pretty substantial. It was bigger 5 hours of eating. Two times. And, so that was just another one. So that's it.
Steve.
I could go on, and we have, but, you know.
Just a delight. And, you know, I absolutely wanted this to be a celebration of, you know, the type of special individual, unique persona that the game attracts, and he was out of Central Casting.
Oh yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. And you know, his brothers, Fred passed away quite a while ago, but Bobby, who passed away, maybe 5-6 years ago or
sounds
so,
right.
Probably
yep.
Around that time. The same way, they were just great guys, great people, fun people, live people. And I think that they were always loyal. And I think the one thing that always bothered Howie, if it not with any particular individual, he just always expected loyalty back. And he got it from most people. I mean, he's just a loyal guy, stand-up guy. And it's just a shame. I mean, it's not a shame. He's 90-something years old. He had a great run. But the last couple of years, you know.
Yeah.
But he was always happy.
Yeah.
He was always happy. So anyway. But great. Well, thanks for calling. I added a couple of
you did.
Anecdotes to
without
program. So.
You absolutely did, Steve, and I appreciate it. No affiliation these days with the game, professionally.
Just as a punter.
Yeah.
And with my online accounts, which I'm happy when I don't have to refund them, if I can get close, you know, and bet on a winner and restock it, it's okay. But yeah, just mostly weekends and stuff. But yeah, just I'm always going to be a fan. So
I love it.
You know,
You come out at all?
Pardon me?
Do you come out to the track much anymore?
Oh yeah, I'll go in Florida. I got to get up to Saratoga. Haven't been to, and of course Keeneland. I live in Lexington, so Keeneland, of course, once that opens and stuff. But I've touched them all. But you know, my favorite was Hialeah and Saratoga, but Hialeah is gone now. And I always like Belmont, but you know, I try and get up there when we're up there at the shore in the summer. And we always go, we live about 9 miles from Monmouth when we're up there. So
perfect.
Get over there.
Perfect.
So, always get out there. If I'm around one, I always like to try and sneak out there for the afternoon.
Well, now that I got your number, we'll get you at Saratoga this summer. We're going to be broadcasting most days from the track.
Oh, good.
And you fill out I think we just hit the tip of the iceberg on stories with you.
Yeah, there's quite a few more.
I got a feeling, yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Steve, thanks so much.
Okay.
Steve Shea, everybody, who was in the van business and a lifelong association with Howie Tesher. Well, Tom Dentora couldn't shake free, and Dave Joseph we'll talk to down in Florida. So we'll get those, hopefully Tom tomorrow before the sale starts. But certainly had a nice round of racetrackers to appreciate the singular special person that Howie Tesher was. Thanks to Steve Shea, Steve Haskin, Dave Granick, Steve Margolis, Chris Migliori, Adam Wachtel, and Aaron Yagoda. Instrumental in a lot of this. Good luck if you're playing today. Kind of quiet out there. We got tons of recapping to do tomorrow, plus a little bit more Howie with Andy Serling, undoubtedly. And a lot more. All right. Hope you enjoyed. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9, here on SiriusXM. Archive podcast later. I'll talk to you in the morning. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Howie, for the smiles.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety.